This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Eliminate bags under your eyes in minutes with Instantly Ageless from GCNLife.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Joe Biden celebrating a very Super Tuesday as the former VP won at least 9 states, including a surprise victory in the big delegate-rich state of Texas.
People are talking about a revolution. We started a movement. We've increased turnout. Yeah! The turnout's turned out for us.
The Democratic race for the White House now seemingly narrowing to Biden and Bernie Sanders. Sanders winning 3 states on Super Tuesday. He's likely to win Maine as well and is leading in the biggest state of California. Italy is shutting down all of its schools and universities for 2 weeks in an attempt to contain the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. There have been about 80 deaths in that country, most located in the northern regions, and they've confirmed over 2,500 cases of the virus. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Allyn-Root, relentless conservative warrior, middle-class warrior, and always Trump warrior. I have a message for my fellow patriots across America. President Trump is making America great again. He's the only president in my lifetime who is keeping his promises, and his biggest promise is to build that wall. President Trump can only do it with our help. If Congress won't fund Trump's wall, we will. President Trump is one man against the world, and what globalists and socialists around the world want is clear, open borders. It's time to take a stand. We either build the wall, or it's the end of the greatest nation of world history ever blessed by God. That's why I founded the Root for the Wall PAC. 63 million Trump voters together will raise the money President Trump needs for the wall. Anyone who donates $100 or more will get a beautiful commemorative wall brick. Display it proudly. Call 844-ROOT-WALL. That's toll free, 844-ROOT-WALL. Or go to rootwall.com. We will build this wall together. Call 844-ROOT-WALL or go to rootwall.com. Root for the Wall PAC. Paid for and responsible for the content of this message. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. Rootwall.com.
President Trump is planning to visit the tornado-ravaged Nashville, Tennessee area on Friday, tweeting that the U.S. stands with the people of Tennessee and will provide whatever they need. FEMA is reportedly on its way. Here's the Putnam County Mayor, Randy Porter.
We were told last night that they felt almost 100% that we would probably be declared as a disaster area when it comes through FEMA, but they are going to be on the ground today.
In what was the worst outbreak of tornadoes in Tennessee since 2011, at least 25 people were killed, and dozens more are unaccounted for. The Pentagon says U.S. forces have carried out an airstrike against the Taliban in southern Afghanistan, the first such attack since the two sides signed a peace deal on Saturday. A military official saying the strike was a defensive measure aimed at disrupting a Taliban attack that was being planned against Afghan security forces. This is USA Radio News.
Friends and family, did you have a great night's sleep last night? I did. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I work better than I ever have. And you know what? You can have that health. You can have that good night's sleep if you order a MyPillow. Try it. Mike Lindell guarantees it. He's got a 60-day money-back guarantee on the MyPillow and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener special. Use my promo code USA or call 1-800-951-8175.
U.S. companies are still hiring despite the coronavirus scare. The just-released ADP private payrolls report for February showing that employment, excluding government jobs, was up by about 183,000 last month. The report was better than analysts were expecting, though the January number was revised a bit downward to 209,000 jobs. Last month, smaller companies were leading the way when it came to creating jobs, with financial services adding the most jobs in February. The defense team for Joseph DeAngelo, the man suspected of being the Golden State Killer and the East Area Rapist, revealing their client has offered to plead guilty to avoid the death penalty. DeAngelo is accused of killing 13 people, raping more than 50 women, and burglarizing dozens of homes during a California crime spree that lasted through the 70s and 80s. The former cop was arrested in Citrus Heights in 2018 after DNA submitted to a public genealogy website.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, it's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. Get this country back on track, but it means that all of us need to get involved. This is an us kind of thing, okay? It's not a Republican or a Democratic kind of thing. It's about we the people. Our next guest, Captain Jeff Morris, retired, has a soldier story for us. It's name of his new book is Legion Rising, Surviving Combat and the Scars It Left Behind. You've heard me talk many times, and you're aware, being a former Marine, but I didn't have to deal with combat. I am grateful, you know, in the bigger picture and scope of the matter, that roughly maybe about 1% of our population experience a combat environment. And when they speak, I believe that we need to stop and listen with a heart of compassion for what they have gone through, even though they may have survived. And I'm grateful for their survival. They have stories to tell and experiences to share with the 99% that, by the grace of God, do not have to go to war. But they went to war so that we wouldn't have to. And they defended our freedoms. And Captain Jeff Morris, thank you for your service to this country, for the service to the 99 that will not find themselves in a combat zone to endure the traumatic experiences that you did as a battalion leader in Iraq of two tours of duty there.
Well, Bill, thank you. I appreciate the kind words, and thank you for your service as well.
Well, as a former infantry officer in the United States Army, as I mentioned, serving two deployments in Baghdad, you have lots of stories to tell. And I know it's difficult for combat soldiers to tell their stories. My dad was in the European theater with General Patton. He was a medic. And so you can imagine the stories that he could tell. But like most veterans of wars, and particularly in a combat environment, we don't get those stories. And I think that sometimes, you know, we need to, it's important to hear the stories because, like I said, 99% of us have not been in a war. You know, we may see a movie or we may play a video game, but altogether a different experience when life and death is measured in seconds, and it's right there next to you.
You know, it is, and it's, you bring up the not talking about it, and for probably the first 5 years when I left active duty, almost 5 years. I left active duty in 2008. I was one of those guys. I didn't talk about anything that I'd seen or done or experienced. And I kind of laugh now. It's like I spent 5 years not talking about it. Now it seems like I won't shut up about it because I see the importance of some of the experiences of what I went through. And, while I'm incredibly appreciative of all the respect and kind words people pay towards veterans, I've also found that, you know, that tragedy and trauma, they don't discriminate, and PTSD is not exclusive to the military. And because of the platform that myself and many veterans have been given, that our stories in many ways relate to your story and to your listener stories, because we're all veterans of life at the end of the day. And if I can use these experiences of mine, albeit they may be different than others, I think it's the lessons learned and the message of hope that comes from that, I think, is one that can apply to all.
Well, Jeff, and you bring up a good point here, and that is that PTSD is non-discriminant, and it is not just exclusive to the battlefield. I think back, in previous wars and what young men and young women experience coming home. We saw stories on television and movies of soldiers coming back and, you know, becoming alcoholics, but little did we know what they were suffering from was PTSD. And not only that people suffered in the battlefield, but your point is well taken, that in everyday life, you know, the trauma of everyday life. I mean, I was talking with a law enforcement officer, 35 years in service, the stories, the things that he endured. I mean, he did it for 35 years, day in and day out dealing with this. I mean, you talk about the impact on his psyche on a continual basis, and that's not to minimize in any way whatsoever, a tour of duty or two tours of duty in a combat zone.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I tell people, that, you know, whenever I go and I give talks now, it's always, I say it jokingly, like the line forms to the left and people want to come up and share their most intimate personal details of their lives, of whatever trauma and experience that they've been through. And I laugh because 99% of them, they walk up and the first words out of their mouth are, you know, well, look, what I went through is nothing compared to what you went through. And that's just not true. You know, we all have our own perspective in life, and that perspective is shaped off our own life experiences. And I don't know what it's like to be a law enforcement officer. I deal with that day in and day out for 35 years. I don't know what it's like to be a victim of sexual assault, like a woman that approached me one time. And they may not know what it's like to be in a combat zone, but
exactly,
none of these experiences are any better or worse. They're just different, and trauma is trauma. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to get across with the book is, you know, yeah, this is a military memoir. It's focused around, you know, my experiences in Baghdad, of course. But the book is not a war story. It's a message of hope that I want one and all to be able to apply to their particular situation.
It is personal. And because it is personal, what you've shared has triggered the remembrances and experiences of other people to see how they've been affected. They've experienced personally their own PTSD. But that's where it is. It is their own. And just as you had to come to that point in your life to, you know, own this issue and do something about it, you know, for the sake of your own self and your family.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it started as a journey of, you know, getting me back to being me and to literally and figuratively, and there's some parts of the book that will explain the significance of a mirror to me. And for almost 5 years of my life, I did anything and everything in my power to not look into a mirror. I mean, I got out of the Army. I shaved my head still. I brushed my teeth in the shower. And I know that sounds crazy, but I just had this thing that happened to me in Iraq that I wouldn't talk about forever. And now I found that to get me back to being me, I'm simplifying it here, but I had to be able to look into a mirror again. And once I could do that, then I could use that particular story and many of my other experiences as a catalyst to help people in their journey. And you talk about ownership. I always call it acceptance. And acceptance is a easy thing to say. It's a hard thing to do. And my counselor told me that we, you know, he asked me if I had accepted these things, and I said, I guess, as much as you can. And he said,
right.
Well, you know, we can't deal with things unless they're real, and things aren't real until you accept them.
Mm-hmm.
And those words were very powerful to me and kind of began the journey of my reawakening back in 2012.
Well, without a doubt, it is a process, and we're going to talk more about that on the other side of the break. This is Bill Martinez. We're live. We're visiting with Jeff Morris, The Soldier Story, Legion Rising, Surviving Combat, and the Scars It Left Behind. More from Jeff after this.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what Wayne has to say.
Extendivite. I have been taking it for about 2 years, and I had really bad heart palpitations. And since I've been taking it, I don't have any major episodes at all anymore. I'm 76 years old, and I still play competitive basketball. Well, of course, I've taken care of myself really good since I was 60, but Extendivite really helped the blood pressure. Really helped the. I used to get really bad episodes of heart palpitations, just skipping beats and double beats. But also, I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate your broadcast. They're just really refreshing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Recover Now is a national campaign aimed at the education and awareness of the devastating effects of opioid and heroin abuse and curbing drug and alcohol addiction in the United States. Recover Now is sponsored by treatment facilities nationwide. Many of them have been where you are, and they want to help by spreading a message of hope and recovery. They're working hand in hand with major insurance companies nationwide that can help you or a loved one get clean in 7 to 30 days. Recover Now is embarking on a national outreach campaign on TV and radio to promote anti-addiction messages. So if you, a loved one, or someone you know has a problem with drugs or alcohol, do not wait. A new life for you could be 30 days away. Call us right now. I promise this call can change your life. Sponsored by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.
800-493-4620. 800-493-4620. That's 800-493-4620.
This is Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. Do you remember where you were on February 23rd, 1945? A bunch of Marines were lifting a flag on Iwo Jima. The battle lasted 36 days, killing 5,931 Marines. Additionally, 209 Navy corpsmen and surgeons assigned to the Marines died, as well as soldiers, sailors, and airmen from other units. More than 110,000 Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen served, with more than 26,000 killed or wounded. So here's your veterans' tip of the day. As you walk by an American flag, stop for a moment and think of the tens of thousands of soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines who were killed or wounded in those days in February of 1945. You will be better for thinking of them. This has been your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day.
Someone once said, live free or die, right? Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're fresh and independent, just the way you always like to hear from us, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific, just about 19 minutes after the top of the hour. You know, not everyone has pulled shards of another man's skull from the palm of their hand. Not everyone has stood over the bodies of friends whose lives were lost in an instant. And not everyone has struggled to face their own reflection for years on end. Not everyone, anyone, I should say, who has experienced trauma or adversity will resonate with Captain Jeff Morris's book, Legion Rising. It is an unflinching, honest account of an Army officer's journey through combat in the Iraq War and his battle to rise above the scars the trauma left behind. You will experience an honest, uncensored, and occasionally humorous. Yes, there can be humor in this because it's all part of our humanity. I mean, how do we manage, Jeff? How do we manage some of these traumatic instances, as we experience the entire spectrum of our emotions from life to death, survival? There will be moments of levity, and maybe unless you're there and if you take it out of context, you might think it's a bit irreverent.
Yeah. You said it exactly. I mean, it's just a myriad of emotions. You know, you're scared. It's exhilarating at the same time. It's the highest highs. I was fortunate. I played football in college and played in front of big crowds before, but nothing will ever replace the rush of combat. And then sometimes afterwards, you're just completely beat. Sometimes afterwards, you're sad, you're crying. I remember one time, and I can't say it was in the middle of a firefight. We were basically pinned down and didn't know where we were being shot at from. So we kind of had to take cover. And, the only spot left for me was to, and stick my head behind a toilet. And I'm like, that's probably got the best spot. I don't want to get hit there. And, no one's saying a word. And one of my guys just peeked over and, and there's intermittent gunfire going on and just kind of said, hey, sir, I bet you never thought you were going to take cover behind an Esser, And everyone just cracked up laughing. And we thought about it afterwards. We're like, how in that environment were we just like a bunch of high school kids cutting up, but, yeah, it's, combat does strange things to you. And, there's a definite physiological reaction that can happen. And I think it's different in each person.
Well, Jeff, when you went to Iraq, where were you in relationship with your faith commitment?
When I first went, I grew up in the church. Mm-hmm. My faith really carried me through my first deployment. I was a platoon leader in downtown Baghdad on Haifa Street, and I didn't lose any soldiers. I had 34 men under my command, and I didn't lose any of them, but we did have 27 Purple Hearts for injuries sustained in combat.
Wow.
It was a tough fight. It was urban combat. It wasn't necessarily IEDs that you hear about in the news all the time. I mean, these were Al-Qaeda fighters, Saddam loyalists. My faith was a big part of getting me through that and carried me through it. It was my second deployment when I went back over as a company commander, and I had 158 men under my command. And it was a much different fight then. It was all IEDs and snipers. On March 15th, 2007, I lost six men from one event. Four were killed instantly, and two died in the following days. And then the young man who had temporarily saved the life of those two men, he was unfortunately about 2.5 weeks after that, he was shot and killed by a sniper. And, to lose seven guys and, from March 15th to April 4th.
Wow.
And in particular, just the way it happened, the gruesome nature of the injuries, in particular, the sniper one at the end, that was the incident that I referenced earlier that kept me from looking in the mirror for almost 5 years. And after that, I'm very open about it. Faith was always an easy thing to have, and I lost it at that point. And it was a struggle, and it was a hard thing to get back. And it took years to get back to that point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was talking with some guys last night, Jeff, and said, it doesn't matter who you are. A crisis of faith, it's not a matter of if, it's when. You will have that crisis of faith because that's that growing opportunity that takes us to that next level to help us realize that no matter the condition, God is there. You know, maybe God was there in the simple things of living in America and having the comfort of home. But when you're in a battlefield and you have those moments of wondering, hey, God, are you there? And you had enough faith to take you through that first deployment. But that second deployment and that experience of losing seven men took you to a whole another level and a whole another experience with God, did it not?
It did. You know, it was, you know, part was just the nature of those seven men. Part of it was, again, the incident that I referenced earlier. And I'll sum it up real quick so it doesn't seem like I'm teasing anything. The guy that was shot in the head by a sniper, I carried him in. And it was a just horrific wound. And I knew I needed to clean myself up before I went and addressed the men and gave him an update after we met back. And he was actually alive at this point. Put him off in a medical helicopter. And when I went to clean myself up, I looked and I had this cut going across my face from about my nose to my ear, and I saw a little bit of blood seeping out of it. I didn't know what had caused it. And then, you know, I was just numb at that point. And I looked down, and that's when I saw that I had fragments of that man's skull stuck in my hands from when I'd carried him in.
Oh, wow.
I wiped the sweat off my face. I had sliced myself open with part of his skull. And, you know, so it was, it just took me to a bad place. I lost my eighth man about 2 months after that. And, it was hard at that time to say, how could God let something like that happen? And you realize things before, you know, bad things happen. Like you said, it's not a matter of if, but when, but when it happens, it can just hit you like a ton of bricks, like it did me. And before, something negative would happen in my life. And that was always the exception. You know, the normal was me and my faith, and it didn't happen overnight. But over the next 5 years, the exception became the norm, and I didn't realize how far removed I had gotten from my faith. And so a big part of me going to counseling, when I talk about the reawakening, it was more than just me emotionally coming to terms with these things and the acceptance of these decisions that I had made that led to eight men losing their lives and, you know, many others injured. That was one aspect of it, but the faith aspect of it was another huge part of getting me back to being me.
Exactly. Well, we're tripart human beings. We're body, mind, and spirit. The spiritual aspect is key. And fortunately, you had that to draw back on. And but as you say, it was a 5-year journey, you know, to come back home.
It was. It was. And I won't sit here and say that 5 years after that, I, you know, flipped the switch and everything was back to good. You know, it's a work in progress. And I think. And that's the message, and I purposely don't talk about the faith aspect as much in the book. I do more when I speak. But, you know, and I think people see that faith or acceptance or ownership, it's not a one-time deal. It's a daily choice that you have to make. It's that daily reminder of yes, these things happen to me, and they shape me. They don't define me. But I can't just say it one time and everything be good for the rest of my life. It's a constant reminder, and it's something that's the beauty of life. It's, you know, the journey is more significant than the destination.
You feel like, in a sense, you know, you talk about, you know, a bit, you refer to destiny, that now it's your mission in representing the men that were lost there in Baghdad to carry their stories forward, that you are the, in essence, the steward of their life story and the story of freedom, you know, for the rest of us. Do you have that sense?
You know, not so much. To me, I look at it as I didn't ask for this platform. Life gave it to me, and I can choose to accept the privilege that comes with that of serving with these men and having the opportunity to honor their memory and their families and their legacy, and or I could, you know, crumble at the burden of all those experiences. And kind of back to what I said earlier, it's a daily choice. And
exactly,
9.9 out of 10 days, I make the right choice, and I do everything to remember my boys and try to use these experiences to make a difference in others' lives.
Well, Jeff Morris tells a soldier's story, Legion Rising, Surviving Combat, and the Scars It Left Behind, available at all the usual places and linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com.
February is Heart Health Month. Give your heart the attention it deserves with Quantum Nutrition Lab's 3 featured supplements formulated to support healthy blood pressure, healthy blood sugar, and circulation. Each are buy 2, get the 3rd one free. And be sure to get your free copy of the Biofield Diet. Now is the time to commit to making your heart health a priority year-round. Call 888-588-7578. That's 888-588-7578. Or visit us online at qnlabs.com. That's qnlabs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of the Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Joe Biden celebrating a very Super Tuesday as the former VP won at least 9 states, including a surprise victory in the big delegate-rich state of Texas.
People are talking about a revolution. We started a movement. We've increased turnout. Yeah! The turnout's turned out for us.
The Democratic race for the White House now seemingly narrowing to Biden and Bernie Sanders. Sanders winning 3 states on Super Tuesday. He's likely to win Maine as well and is leading in the biggest state of California. Italy is shutting down all of its schools and universities for 2 weeks in an attempt to contain the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. There have been about 80 deaths in that country, most located in the northern regions, and they've confirmed over 2,500 cases of the virus. This is USA Radio News.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and 3-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the 5 little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-985-1813 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Milberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-985-1813 now. Again, that's 800-985-1813. Employees of J.D. Milberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What more could you want? Bill Martinez live. Turn it up.
Just like that, we're back with you, America. Great to have you along with us. I hope you're enjoying the show. Boy, I'll tell you, we got a real treat for you, because we're going to be talking about Screening Realities, a new book from John Wilkman, how documentary filmmakers reimagined America. Kenneth Turan of the L.A. Times film critic says it's authoritative, accessible, and elegantly written. Screening Reality is the history of American documentary films we have been waiting for. Oh, boy, I'll tell you, that is excellent praise from Kenneth, John, huh?
Yeah, I was very pleased, he was quite enthusiastic, and that's always fun for an author to hear.
Well, especially when you start out with a project like this, you look out over the landscape and you say, oh, wow, you know, really, you think about it, there's really not a book about documentary filmmaking. Maybe I should write one, right?
Well, as you know, I've been a documentary filmmaker for all my professional life, which I hate to tell you is many, many years. So it's a profession that I've followed and enjoyed and respect. And so it really was a pleasure to be able to look back and see what others, like me and obviously many times better than me did when they tried to make sense of the real world on film.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just started to say that, as you stated, you're an author and award-winning filmmaker whose work has appeared on ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, HBO, A&E, all the three-letter significant outlets. His seven-part Turner Classic movie series, Moguls and Movie Stars, A History of Hollywood, was nominated for three Emmys. His previous book, Floodpath, was an Amazon Nonfiction Book of the Year. So my question to you, John, sometimes, you know, we're so close to it that we hasten, or we not so much hasten, but we just can't see that there is value in our work or in the category of work that we do. Did you look at it that way initially, that, you know, maybe people would not be interested in this, or did you always see this as something that would be compelling?
Well, you know, one of the things about documentary filmmakers, at least the best of them, the most serious of them, it's really not a profession. It's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I thought what I could write about and what I could discover would be exciting. Also, really, this is a kind of a two-layered book. It's a history of the United States from the 1890s, when the first movies were made, up until the present. It's also a history of the movies. So when I did the series for Turner Classic Movies, Moguls and Movie Stars, that was about, you know, the fictional film world. And I realized as I was doing that there was another kind of a parallel history going on that really was in some ways more revealing and more interesting and more exciting than the you know, the feature films, as far as understanding what our country is and what it's becoming and the things we've accomplished as a nation and the problems we face.
Well, I like that you write that it's the history. It's the first comprehensive history of American documentary film, a widescreen view of how American truth has been discovered, defined, projected, televised, and streamed during more than 100 years of dramatic change through world wars and World Wars I and II, the dawn of mass media, the social and political turmoil of the 60s and 70s, and the communications revolution that led to a 21st century of empowered yet divided Americans. Wow, that is a mouthful, but that really takes us down the yellow brick road here of American life, doesn't it?
Well, also, one of the things that this is not a textbook or, you know, a dry kind of compendium of dates and lists of films. These are a series of portraits of people and what they did, why they did it, who they were, the adventures, the successes, the failures, the compromises they made in trying to make films that, you know, sort of created a sense of what the world was in the time in which they lived.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much a personal film. It's very much a kind of a what I call narrative history, not traditional academic history.
Well,
so I hope readers will find it, you know, compelling.
Well, and as you say, I think people will read this book and see that you approach writing this book almost as you were doing a documentary, you know, film project on screening reality. I think it's an interesting approach, but you can't, you know, you are who you are and your expression is what it is and there's value here to it. So I think in parts as I was reading this, I had this sense that I was in a documentary actually.
Well, I'm hoping very much that this will turn into a documentary series because I think that we, today, people really think we're living in a golden age of documentaries. In many ways, we are. More documentaries are made, watched, respected. All the international and national film festivals, often it's the documentaries that engender the more excitement than the latest, you know, drama film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an exciting time for documentary filmmakers, but it's also extremely challenging times for documentary filmmakers. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, is to give a sense of you know, this difficult task of making sense of the real world, conveying it, and how documentary filmmakers can contribute to, you know, understanding our world today. But also, you know, they can make compromises that can make it more difficult to understand what's really going on. So that's really what my goal was. But the main thing is these are interesting characters. I mean, they were inventors. They were engineers. They were explorers. They were activists. They were educators. They were entrepreneurs. They were entertainers. They were journalists. A wide range of people, all of whom were sort of engaged in this process of trying to figure out what the world is and convey it.
And I believe the benefit of producing a documentary, as you say, you know, in the midst of this post-truth era that we live in, I mean, this is a genre that allows us to really expose the truth and even touch on the nuance of the truth, where with 8-second sound bites and, you know, some movie, other movies, the way they're, you know, presented with maybe a foregone conclusion. I don't know. I see documentary filmmaking, you know, to be more truth-seeking, I guess.
Well, ideally it should be, but I don't let my fellow documentarians off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly audiences have shown, you know, an interest in what I call mutant nonfiction, like reality mm-hmm. TV.
Yes.
And documentary filmmakers often, because of the success, are intrigued by expanding and new inventive ways to tell stories. And they can sometimes contribute to that, because ultimately you end up with this devaluation of what we used to consider sort of a general agreement on the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of gone by the by, and people are questioning what they're seeing and hearing, and often believing what they prefer to believe rather than based on any kind of you know, evaluation of evidence. So documentary filmmakers, I think, share some of that. They've, mm-hmm. they've made entertaining films that have raised audience interest in what I saw kind of a quasi-documentary. But at the same time, they have the answers, too. They can return a sense of respect for authenticity, a sense an evaluative sense of, you know, coming to conclusions based on evidence rather than personal preference. So
right.
It's exciting for documentary filmmakers, and as I say, they both have the opportunity to really make major positive changes, but they can contribute to things that are not going to be so good, too.
Exactly. Well, John, I can sense from your heart that this is a time-honored profession for you that goes deep in honoring the original idea of documentary filmmaking and presenting the truth runs deep for you.
Well, you know, one of the things that's exciting that I learned, or certainly found out about in more detail when I was doing the series Return of Classic Movies, the first movies that were made really were documentaries. They weren't dramas. They weren't fictional stories. They were people walking around on the street. They were travelogues that took you to different countries and showed you what the countries looked like. One of the earliest films, the first film to be patented by Edison, was a short 5-second film of a man sneezing.
We got to go to break. We'll pick it up from there, okay, because I want to hear the whole story.
Great.
Stay with us.
No problem.
We got more with John after this.
I took my family on a vacation like the one you're about to hear about, and we had an amazing time. And the best part about it was the price.
If you're looking for an amazing, fun-filled vacation for you and your family for an unbelievable price, keep listening for details on how you can get a fabulous 4-day vacation for just $99. Westgate Resorts has been a leader in affordable vacation plans since 1982, and now you can choose from over 10 beautiful resort destinations across the United States, like Orlando, Florida, or the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. So whether you love world-famous theme parks or the tranquility of nature, Westgate Resorts has your next dream vacation. Plus, if you're one of the first 100 to call, we'll tell you about our $29 Las Vegas special. Call right now to book your amazing vacation for only $99.
800-883-1612. 800-883-1612. Call 800-883-1612. This advertisement is being used for the purpose of soliciting sales of a timeshare plan. Restrictions apply. Go to westgateterms.com for complete offer terms.
Attention, this is a public notice from the Social Security Disability Helpline. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right. If you suffer from physical or mental disability, whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, we can help. We'll evaluate your situation and deal with Social Security on your behalf. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. Remember, we only get paid if you win your case. There are many reasons and conditions that may make you eligible for disability benefits. Many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call now to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation.
800-368-0123.
800-368-0123. That's 800-368-0123.
I'm here with Scott Useum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Bill Martinez, live.
Good day, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour, conversation with John Wolfman continues. His book, Screening Reality, gives us an incredible view and a walk down history from Edison to IMAX, Ken Burns to virtual environments, the first comprehensive history of American documentary film, and the remarkable men and women who changed the way we view the world. John, let's go back and pick up on the story that you were telling us before we had to go to break.
Well, the first, really the beginning of what became film, in the experiments that were done by a photographer named Edward Muybridge in 1878, he was assigned by Leland Stanford, who was the founder, or at least the person who gave away the money as it began Stanford University and made his fortune on the Transcontinental Railroad. He was, Stanford wanted to know, he was a guy who was involved with horse racing, and he wanted to know whether a running horse, all four hoofs of a running horse, were ever off the ground at the same time. And so what Muybridge did is he lined up a series of cameras and with tripwires, and as the horse ran by sequentially, camera after each camera, it showed individual photographs of the horse running, and really individual frames. Mm-hmm. And it did show the horse, all four hoofs of the horse are off of the ground. So in Money Maze, the deepest roots of the movies was the search for truth.
Mm-hmm.
Did a horse have all four hoofs off the ground? So that, you know, carries all the way through. And, of course, by the, you know, the early teens and certainly the 20s, you know, movies were really basically entertainment and they were dramas. But documentaries didn't go away. And they are a kind of a parallel history that is, I think, fascinating and not fully explored.
Mm-hmm. John, what drew you into it? What drew you into documentary filmmaking?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I said, what drew you into documentary filmmaking?
I think it's the same. It's a single word that really, I think, draws all documentary filmmakers. The word is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Curious about the world, trying to figure out what it is, how it works. But more than anything else, to me, what I've done all my life as a documentary filmmaker, which gives me the most pleasure, is I go out and I see something, and it excites me, and my eyes open, wow. Then I make a movie about it, and I show it to somebody else, and they see it, and their eyes open and go, wow.
Exactly.
It's that sharing, mm-hmm. which is exciting to documentary filmmakers and certainly to me.
Mm.
Are you in Minneapolis?
Well, our studios are in Minneapolis. I'm in Florida, so and you're in Southern California. So we got the Holy Triangle going on here.
Well, I did a documentary of a few years back, tracing the entire Mississippi River from the origins in northern Minnesota all the way down to New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
And all along the way, I was meeting and finding and seeing things that I thought other people who maybe would never make that trip might find interesting. So that's, again, the kind of the driving force for me and I think most really documentary filmmakers.
And it does kind of answer that that yearn for and curiosity in all of us, doesn't it? I mean, just something that is just part of our humanity.
Very much so. And that's, again, what I think is again, talking about the challenges and the dangers for documentary filmmakers is that, as I say in the book, a fiction filmmaker, their film has to be believable.
Mm-hmm.
A nonfiction filmmaker has to be credible. It has to be worthy of trust. In other words, you're saying to the viewer, I'm not a fiction filmmaker. I've done the best I can to find the truth and to tell it to you honestly. You should trust me to being credible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose that sense of trust for a documentary filmmaker, you really lose everything. A fiction filmmaker can have a bomb and, you know, do another film a year later and that continue a career. If a documentary filmmaker loses trust with the audience that you've deceived them consciously or unconsciously, you haven't told them the truth, then you basically are in a situation where you lose your credibility, which is essential to
exactly.
any documentary.
Which is quite interesting today that you have that kind of standard in documentary filmmaking when in other genres you can get away with stretching the truth or hiding the truth.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, one of the things that's always been very tempting is that you can't show and tell everything you've learned.
Right.
So all filmmaking and all documentaries, in fact, all art is a selection. You are evaluating what you've seen. You know, I took this trip down the Mississippi River. It took me, you know, a month. Obviously, the film isn't a month long.
Mm.
I made selections along the way that I felt were indicative, honestly indicative of what I saw. They were interesting. They were, I think, informative, hopefully entertaining. So really what happens is sometimes critics say, oh, well, you know, you left this out or you, you know, there's more to this story. Well, yeah, in many cases it is.
Right.
But what you told and what you showed should be honestly reflective of the bigger picture as well as the individual things you're showing. And that's, again, the challenge for nonfiction filmmakers.
Well, I think the other thing, too, like in anything that entertains, is that you leave them wanting for more or you set them on a course to discover for themselves, right?
Absolutely. I think that's the great strength of you know, Ken Burns is probably the most popular and best-known American documentary filmmaker. And even when he does films that are 14, 15, 16 hours long, you know, he gets criticized and sometimes justifiably. But mainly what he does, it often, in many cases, spurs people to go and look for themselves. To either, he has a book associated, read the book. If it's like jazz, you wouldn't go out and get some CDs and listen to the music. And that's what any documentary filmmaker wants to do. You can't tell it all, show it all, but hopefully you generate curiosity in your viewer so that they go out and take it to the next, you know, two or three steps and learn for themselves.
John, for you, what a wonderful opportunity to, you know, discover again these stories of inventors and adventures and journalists, entrepreneurs, artists, activists. You know, kind of like what we're talking about right now. You're picking and choosing who to include in this book. Along this this journey, you know, what else stuck in your mind in terms of people and adventures that they presented to us, you know, by way of documentary filmmaking?
Well, of course, you know, again, this book is a selective process, which I you know, openly admit in the opening chapter, the prologue. I mean, this is a selection, but I did have standards for a selection. I was really interested in two or three things. I was interested in filmmakers that were relating to their time period and made some kind of contribution or in some way reflected their time period and or changed or had an effect on how documentary films evolved. So there are many films, or not many, but there are a number of interesting films made by filmmakers who really only made one film, and it's a terrific film,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't have a lasting career. So I tended to go to people that had lasting careers I tended to go to filmmakers that were somehow connected to their time, their period, and filmmakers that contributed to the evolution of film. So that was the basis, the criteria that I used, and I state my criteria. So there are going to be people who are documentary fans are going to say, oh, you left out my favorite documentary. Yeah. Well, it may have been my favorite, too, but for whatever reason, my criterion meant that I had to choose, and I often did.
Exactly. Like everything else about filmmaking, some of it is there on the floor. That's just the way it goes, right? Let's get specific and talk about, we've got about 3.5 minutes left here. Share some of the stories and the people specifically.
Well, I think that the person who basically started what was known as the modern narrative documentary was a man named Robert Flaherty, who in 1922 made a documentary about Inuit peoples in the Canadian Arctic called Nanook. And that really, it's a silent movie. It's very old-fashioned. And yet it does continue to have an influence because he saw drama in everyday life. The big turning point that took place as far as technical, often technique changes things, was in the 1960s with lighter cameras, synchronous sound, and it became something known as cinema verite or direct cinema. Mm-hmm. That really is very actively influential now, and there are filmmakers that did that. I mean, a guy named Bob Drew, Alan David Maisels, Fred Wiseman working today. These are people who wanted to not convey information in a kind of an academic way. They wanted to share an experience. They wanted viewers to experience something.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very influential today in good reason, good ways, and also it's turned out not to be so much good ways as well.
Mm-hmm.
My last chapter is about the world of virtual reality, which is coming very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And which basically, the borders between what we consider the real world and a synthetic world are changing so rapidly, we may not be able to tell the two apart. And things like deep fakes, if you've heard of that, that's a technical ability to take an existing piece of video and to transform it so that it looks totally credible and totally real, but it's been manufactured.
Exactly.
It's not. So what happens then? That's when you really need the credibility of people who make documentaries and other kinds of people to say, this is, when I do this, you need to trust that I'm doing the best I can to tell you the truth. Otherwise, frankly, we're lost. If we can't tell the difference between truth and fakery, we're in bad, particularly for an American democracy that depends on an educated populace, we're lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, this past week I was in Nashville and was presented with immersive history that was just that. I mean, it gave you a virtual reality experience of the Holy of Holies. I mean, you could actually visit Israel, through this, and you had this sense that you were there. I mean, the kind of technology that is just around the corner is absolutely incredible, John Wilkman.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrific. I mean, to be able to, a lot of people will never have a chance to go to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to go there for virtual reality is very exciting. And yet there's going to be situations where people are going to use this in ways to divert attention, to mislead people, and that's not good.
Well, it's kind of like with music. Musicians use reverb and distortion. As one of my classic guitar players explained, he says, well, that was to hide their mistakes. He's a professional filmmaker, documentarian, John Wilkman. His new book, Screening Reality, it'll be linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com and available at all the usual places, right, John?
Yes, indeed. You can get it online. You can get it at your local bookstore. There's an audio book and a Kindle.
John, thank you for the time. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
I don't even recognize myself anymore.
I'm really worried about him. His addiction. I haven't seen him like this. Ever.
Hey, look, I never wanted to start using. I knew the drill, but I was out of options.
I just want to tell him it's not your fault. There are people out there who can help. People who have felt your pain. They know what you're going through.
This has to stop. I'm losing everything. Everyone.
You've been strong your whole life. You can do this. But you have to reach out for help.
It's time. I can do this.
Addiction is a disease. and diseases need treatment.
Call Quit Drugs 321 now at 800-377-1456. 800-377-1456. That's 800-377-1456. Paid for by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.
Do the letters.